Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.25. If you aren't as sweaty as Mo Wagner, no water for you. Have you heard of a Pittsburgh left?
No, I haven't.
Pittsburgh left is in Pittsburgh. That was probably self-explanatory. When the light turns green, if you're trying to turn left in like a without a light,
yeah,
they let you. So the first car who wants to turn left is like, all right, I'm going to turn left.
So the thing that like here you'd be like, you jerk, is
right.
Something that's just encoded in there,
right? Because they have a lot. They have a lot of hilly streets. They have a lot of one-lane streets.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of the whole line of cars being stuck behind this one guy who wants to turn left but cannot, they have a social custom
to let that person go
and help facilitate traffic. And I'm going to connect this to Michigan's second half offense in some way. I don't know how yet.
We're working on it.
But we would like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshare Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. Yeah.
they figured it out. It took a little longer than we would have liked, than anybody outside of everybody would have liked, because Michigan was very much the enemy.
Oh, yeah.
Last night.
People like tweeting about like if you're rooting for Michigan, you're a cop. I'm like, other than Michigan fans, who is rooting for Michigan? Literally nobody.
Yeah, nobody's rooting for Michigan except us. We're not cops, but we're just Michigan fans. Some of us might be cops.
Same thing to certain fan bases. But Michigan wins over Loyola Chicago. What was the final? I can't even. I'm just like.
The final score was 69-57.
Nice.
Yes.
And I don't know how it was 12 points. Like, Michigan just fumbled around and was just kind of farting around for 30 minutes. And then they turned into a death machine for the final 10.
Yeah. I mean, this was one of those games where you're watching for the whole time, like, I'm never going to be able to shake how bad this is. Like that, like this is a hauntingly bad game. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, Duncan Robinson gets his sixth point, and it's all good.
And
right?
It was that's like
it really did happen, like right around then.
Like, no, he.
It really starts a couple minutes earlier when like Beilein kind of he goes with the drip boys and.
A couple of them.
Yeah, well, yeah, he puts in pool mostly, and put in pool. Yeah. You know. Pool does well. Teske gets a stop in there and then gets a foul called on him.
He's not a drip boy.
He's not a drip boy. He's just young.
He's the least of the
he is the least drippy
of all
yeah,
the boys.
Yeah. But, you know, so it kind of starts earlier, but, you know, that Duncan Robinson hitting the magic six-point mark does kind of happen right around when, well, when like, and it's an inflection point this game.
It is, because he hits, you know, the second three, cuts it to three. That was 42-45, and from there, you know, Michigan puts up almost 30 points. Loyola barely gets 10. It really, you know, people have been making fun of it and kind of bringing it up, ha 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 ha.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
this
like,
was like it happened,
rightfully so. But like, am I starting to be a believer? I mean, especially with how much the Mo Wagner first three theorem has also been thrown in our face the last couple games.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, maybe there's something to this weird, I mean.
Well, the Mo Wagner's thing is about
stuff.
Mo.
Yes, I mean, there's kind of an explanation there as opposed to just like this magical six-point
right.
barrier for Duncan Robinson.
But Mo did have historic performance.
Historic unlike any seen since Akeem Olajuwon when he did not have the H.
The only the third person in Final Four history to have a 2015 game. Larry Bird is the other, and of course, Ant Wright.
Is the only person who doesn't find that impressive.
Well, no, Ant Wright was just like, Larry Bird kind of brings his group down. I'm like, ah. Probably right. But so the first half when Michigan really couldn't get anything going, they sustained themselves on second chance points largely generated by Wagner. So Michigan can't post. It doesn't matter what happens. You could put Muggsy Bogues on Mo Wagner.
They're not going to get that entry pass.
No, they're not.
Just, they're not going to space it correctly.
They haven't practiced it all year.
It's not going to be.
They're never going to practice it. They're just not going
to. Stop asking for it. Anybody who brings up trying to put two posts out there, should, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't. Just don't do this.
I do confess that it crossed my mind last
Brian,
night.
Brian, don't do this.
Only because, like.
So. I mean, when they went, like, true Lilliputian for a while, and it looked like they might be able, like there was like a couple Teske possessions in there where it was like, you know, I could see it, but yeah. It was also like we could just spread these guys out and shred them,
I guess. But you know, I'm not saying it was something that was ever,
it was something that took like a really like a historically bad performance right. For the backcourt to really want to think
and about. I was like, do I really want both Simpson and Marr out there since they're both really scuffling? Not really. What can
not
we do about this?
And I was Beeline did find a different way around that.
Right. So that's kind of what I was referencing. Like we, my idea was like, this is a terrible idea, but, and then Beeline's terrible idea was less terrible.
Yeah. So from, I have this ready. From the 11:25 mark of the second half, when Michigan is down 8 points. To the 4:06 mark of the second half when Michigan goes up five. The lineup combinations they put out there were Jerron Simmons with Muhammad Ali Abdurrahman, Jordan Poole, Duncan Robinson, and John Teske. They had played 19 offensive possessions and 20 defensive possessions all year. Then they take out Rockman and insert Jordan Poole and take out Teske and put in Wagner. That lineup has played even less. Same deal with the next when they put in Simpson for Simmons, and same deal when they put in Livers for Duncan. These four lineups that cover the biggest stretch of the game for Michigan had played basically 60 a game's worth of possessions together in this entire season, and most of it, as you can imagine, given those lineup combinations, did not come in crunch time. And they were, and those four lineup combos were +3 on the entire season, instead of, you know, +13 in right. In a quick stretch. And almost all of that was the very first lineup combo, and the rest of those were mostly in the negative.
And the first lineup combo was out there for the 11-0 run that really kind of triggered Michigan's victory. And the thing that stuck out to me about that run is Loyola didn't just not get any points during that run, they didn't get any shots.
Yes.
So Michigan's defense, you know, even with Simpson kind of scuffling and out of the game for large sections.
So active.
Yeah, and you've got Mo reaching in on people and getting steals and stuff, fouls. You have complete coverage of the three-point line to the point where less than 20% of the shots Loyola gets up are threes. They have 41 twos. They had 10 threes. They only make one of those threes, and Michigan might get a little lucky there. But, you know, maybe Loyola also got a little lucky with shooting behind the three-point line. Just maybe a little bit. Please. Please.
I mean, it was fun reading through the press transcript from Porter Moser after this game, Loyola's coach, because he was talking about, you know, bringing up Michigan's defense, and he could not be more complimentary of it as he, you know,
well, he just
it didn't need to get pulled out of him. I'll put it that way. Yeah. But he was talking about how, I mean, there were some plays where, like, you know, and I think I know exactly which play he was referring to, but he talked about a play where they had a cut to the basket that he thought was wide open, and Michigan just shut down the gap. I think it was when Charles Matthews popped out of nowhere to steal a bounce pass going toward that was going to be a layup. I mean, there were a few plays like that where, this team covers ground quickly. I mean, even when they had Jordan Poole in there and Poole was, you know, getting a little dicey with his assignments every once in a while, as he is wont to do, he covers so much ground, and they were playing so aggressively and rotating so well behind everybody that it was almost good when they got a split second of an opening, because it kind of started chaos, and chaos ended up going Michigan's way most of the time.
Yeah, I actually was impressed with Poole's defense. I didn't think he was...
he wasn't perfect. But he was better than he had been, right, and he was playing really hard.
Yeah, and he got a couple of those drives to the basket that Michigan really needed, kind of during the point in the second half where they're threatening to go down double digits, do go down double digits a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, within 10 seconds of entering the game, he takes a two baseline for a layup.
Yeah, and he did that a couple times, didn't hit any of his threes because nobody hit any of their threes.
Except Mo.
And just, I think, an encouraging performance for his future, because this was a big stage, and I thought he did well with it. Kind of the contrast between him and E.B. Watson's lone minute was...
Yeah, we'll mention that as briefly as he was in there.
He did have a turnover that wasn't charged to him. It was actually charged to Matthews.
And it was a brilliant pass by Matthews.
Yeah, and then he's back cut on the next possession, and I'm just like, I don't know.
It was good that John Beilein made that the end of the E.B. Watson Final Four experiment.
I just don't know. I think we would have been better off with Poole out there.
Yeah.
Speaking of Charles Matthews, that was his one turnover, which wasn't even
his
turnover.
Yeah, it should have been charged to him.
Because it hit E.B. in the hands.
Yep, straight off his hands. And that would have been the first turnover-free game for Matthews. But instead, it ends up being his seventh game out of the last eight in which he has committed only one.
Really?
Yes, because he had the five turnover game against Montana in the first game of this tournament. But the last three games of the Big Ten tournament, he just had one. In fact, in the first game of the Big Ten tournament, he didn't have a single one. So this is a very different Charles Matthews.
Yeah.
He's now, you know, he's back the last five games. He's broken 20% usage and double-digit points. He's the guy who's most consistently taking the ball to the basket and finishing.
Yes.
He's going left. It's crazy. There was one point where Bill Raftery said very incorrectly that his strength was going left. And you might have actually been able to mistakenly say that from watching that one specific possession. But Raftery started going on about how you had to watch the left hand, and I started cackling. I love Raftery.
Well, no,
he was wrong there.
Sure. You know, you can't have a full scouting report for every player in the country.
No, you can't. And Raftery's final, 5 minutes of this game was pure brilliance, too. So, you know... Love Raft, the bigger point is that announcers are talking about Charles Matthews being dangerous going to his left, and even if that's something that still strikes me as kind of crazy, he can fool you into thinking that the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, he was along with Wagner really the only consistent offensive options for Michigan in this entire game.
Yeah, and like Wagner, and we should bring it up with Wagner too. Playing great defense.
Yeah. Wagner. So the one time in my life that Mo Wagner has reminded me of Ricky Doyle came late in the first half of this game, because he was just soaked.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, he's so tired. We have to get him out of there. But he was tired because he was able to stay out there.
He briefly joined the Drip Boys for a different reason.
He picked up just one foul that early in the second half. I thought it was a little bit tenuous.
A little bit iffy. He brings the arm down, but, you know, that can go either way.
And so he's out there for 37 minutes. Teske only gets 3 minutes in this game.
Yeah. In a game that I think, I still believe could have suited him quite well. But Wagner was playing so well that...
Yeah, you couldn't take him off.
Yeah, you just have to have him out there.
Even if he was dripping.
Yes.
Quite spectacularly.
Yeah.
And Michigan never doubles Krutwig at all in this game. And Krutwig finishes 7-11 from the floor, but has just one assist to six turnovers, and they use him in the high post a ton.
Yeah, this is a dude with the 15% assist rate on the season. Yeah. This is a guy they run a lot of offense through.
So
and that probably undersells how much he moves the ball, too, because he gets it and they swing it.
Yeah. So he comes out with a 92-0 rating against Mo Wagner. And Wagner doesn't put him on the line. Wagner stays out there. Wagner dominates the offensive and defensive boards. Well, it's not. Loyola doesn't really try to offensive rebound.
No, but one, I mean, what I was really impressed by is, I mean, there are a couple possessions where Krutwig really gets good, and this will happen. I mean, these guys are battling for post position. Wagner's trying to stay out of foul trouble, and, you know, Krutwig gets him on a couple.
Yeah.
But there are a couple plays where Wagner got him entirely out of the paint. or up into the, you know, the little dotted semicircle that comes down below the free throw line. And once you're out there and you're trying to put up post moves, you're in trouble.
Yeah, it's tough.
And Krutwig tried to force some of those. And I think part of it was because he was caught off guard by Wagner playing with the strength he did. And I started watching him off the ball a little bit. And he really did a spectacular job positioning. I mean, another play that jumps to mind is when he forced a turnover on Krutwig, where Krutwig got deep and Wagner kind of flips around and pins him to the baseline and Krutwig steps out. But he just had figured out the positioning, had figured out that instead of just letting Krutwig, you know, keep his basket back to the basket right under it, just turn around and pin this dude to the baseline. And you got a turnover. Wagner played a really smart defensive game.
So those are all the reasons that Michigan won this game.
Do we talk about the other things?
If Michigan was going to lose this game, it was because their backcourt had
a collective nightmare.
A collapse. So I think Marr starts this game 0 of 8 from the field. And like he's taking like pull-up threes a little bit. And I'm like, you can't. Not now. You need to put some glasses on. Maybe you'll put some glasses on for Villanova.
Yeah.
And then Xavier Simpson looked like early season Xavier Simpson.
Except somehow maybe worse.
Okay, elaborate on that.
I mean, because Custer was getting him a little bit more than I expected. It seemed like Simpson's struggles on offense started affecting his defense for a little bit. I mean, I'm not surprised that kind of the final straw for Beeline, where he was like, I need to put Jaron Simmons in here in the second half of a Final Four game, was not just Simpson's early turnovers in that half, but when Custer kind of gets free from him off the ball and hits a pretty open rhythm mid-range jumper off the baseline.
Are we thinking of the same shot? I was like, yeah, that's a good shot. I mean, it was
open. I mean, it's wide. Like, it's something that Simpson never gives up.
Okay.
And for Custer, that's a good shot. And he probably could have popped out to the three-point line and made it a better shot. So, I mean, and that was what was surprising with Simpson, was not just that he's coughing up the rock as frequently as he was. You know, Simpson missing shots, not totally unusual. Michigan tends to get around that, but he wasn't even initiating offense.
No.
Loyola switching had something to do with that, but you know, this isn't something that Michigan is unfamiliar with at this point. And for some reason, it totally took Simpson out of his game here. And you know, Michigan was certainly fortunate that it happened in the semifinal instead of the final, because that certainly can't happen again.
I would say yes. Michigan's guards are collectively like 2 of 17 or whatever from the floor. I think that's an L against Villanova. Just a hunch. Call it a hunch.
Yeah. 2 of 17. 7 points, 4 turnovers, 1 steal. Not what you expect from that backcourt.
No.
Now, to Simpson's credit, he comes in at the end of the game, moves the ball well, gets an assist.
That's part of Michigan's lockdown at the end of the game.
Yes, and plays like his level of defense.
Yeah.
That was encouraging. I mean, it, at least from like a mental bounce back standpoint, I would like to see Simpson see the ball go through the basket early in the championship game, if that's at all possible. But
I feel like
at least for him, and like he's going to want to rise to the occasion of Jalen Brunson, hopefully more than he seemingly got up for Clayton Custer.
So those last 10 minutes, light changed.
Yeah.
And God was like, I know I'm rolling with Sister Jean, but why don't you turn left? I did it!
There it is!
I did it!
There it is!
I did it!
Came back around. Also, this feels like a relatively logical endpoint, but I do need to shout out CJ Baird for his thunderous block.
Right, yes.
He's CJ Baird the God now.
Well, he'll put it on you in the last minute of a ball game.
He has a 330 O rating, a 122 defensive rebounding rate, and a 105% block rate
that
against tier A opponents this year.
That's
greatest player of all time.
How You can't block more than all the shots.
You can if you're CJ Barrett. He has broken the system. He is the greatest player to ever live. Play him over Ibby.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Yeah. my fitty cap. My city hot, I'm dodging the city cop. I'm playing like pity pat. I'm kicking back.
So the good news is that Michigan is in the national championship game for men's basketball. The bad news is
Kansas did not beat Villanova.
Or come anywhere close.
No, they did not.
Villanova is like up 20 points immediately because Kansas is like, you know what we're going to do against Villanova is let them shoot 4 2-pointers in like a half.
And no free throws, everything beyond the arc, everything.
Because they were wide open. Every shot was wide open. What do you...
I am almost 100% positive that Villanova had more three-point attempts in the first half than any Michigan opponent has had in a full game this year.
Yeah, they were, I think, 13 for 23 in the first half.
Okay, so in that case, Michigan has had one game where they allowed 24 three-point attempts, and they beat Michigan State because Michigan State made 7 of those.
Right.
Might even been 7 for 28. It was kind of weird.
I mean, I don't subscribe to the Bill Self as a big dummy school of thought about coaches,
but last night did not help that.
But he,
I mean that defensive approach. I question it.
I sure
question the idea that you just let them run a shooting gallery on you.
I don't think they could have gotten more wide open threes if that was like the game plan for Kansas.
Yeah, no. If it looks like, you know, one of those games where you go against a bad shooting team and you go, if it happens, it happens.
It's like they thought Villanova was just 5 tum-tums.
Yeah, or like Syracuse or something. Like, or Michigan State.
So bad. Like, it's so bad that, like, I can't even, like, think about what Michigan's defense is going to have to do against Villanova. Because it's like, well, we didn't see... It was completely useless for scouting. Because it was.
It was. I have no intention of rewatching that game. I don't see the point.
No.
I'll watch a different Villanova game.
It's just... I don't know, man.
I'll watch one where an opponent guarded them in a way that made any sort of sense. Because Kansas got hit with 95 points in a freaking national semifinal.
Yeah.
And it honestly could have been worse.
Deserved every one of them.
Yep.
Because I just don't... How do you let Villanova get up 23 threes in a half and 4 2-pointers?
Yeah, I mean, just start sprinting at the free throw or at the 3-point line arc at some point. Just anything but that. Like, I don't care if it's a parade of dunks.
They're doubling drivers in this game. Like, Brunson will try to drive and he draws like...
They were doubling Brunson in the post.
Defense. Yeah.
It's like, what the... Are you doing?
I let him shoot.
What are you doing?
It's probably a good shot, but it's not...
Yeah, I mean,
as good as a wide open three for these guys.
Villanova puts you in a heck of a bind, but don't let him do that.
Yeah. All right. So, speaking of Villanova putting you in a heck of a bind, everybody on this team shoots excellently from three. Even Eric Pascal, who's the worst statistically, started the year 1 of 27. So, if you...
Also, he could not miss against Kansas.
He couldn't miss against Kansas. And, like, until last night, you know, Xavier Simpson... wasn't early season Xavier Simpson. So his season stats don't really give you a great perspective on who he is as a player. Yep. Same thing with Pascal, who is now a 34-35% three-point shooter. His number is probably closer to 40 in reality.
And that gives him seven guys.
Seven.
In that range.
All of whom hit a three against Kansas in the first 10 minutes of that game.
Yes. Yeah.
Villanova hit more threes in the first 10 minutes of that game than both teams in the other semifinal combined for the whole game.
Well, that doesn't surprise me that much.
I mean, but,
but still.
So.
No, they're a heck of a team. There's not really somebody that you can't fall asleep on anybody.
No.
There are two players that... Really, I take that back. There are three players that would draw the majority of the defense's attention against most teams.
Right.
Because you've got Jalen Brunson at point guard. You got Mikal Bridges on the wing, who is he is working his way up the lottery, and I would pick him after that top tier. that very top tier of NBA draft guys right now, he is right in that conversation. The like he could go number six in a very loaded draft. And then you've got Omari Spellman at center, who can post up, block shots, rebound, and then he steps out and hits 44% of his threes.
Yeah, he's a freshman from Ohio.
Yeah, that's real messed up. I don't know what happened there.
What? Why didn't I hear about this guy, at least because like Michigan is like, maybe we should get that guy. Or Ohio State.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I mean, obviously Villanova has a lot of recruiting pull at this juncture in time.
Yeah, I mean, Villanova has a very good pitch to a guy like that.
Right. It's like, hey, huh? Yeah. Like, we're Villanova.
Did you see Jay Wright's reaction to winning a national title? Like, he is cold as ice, and he will let you do whatever you want if that's making threes.
Yeah. I mean, Michigan's greatest asset in this game is the style of their defense, where they will not allow Villanova to get off uncontested threes.
It is going to be a heck of a clash of styles on that end.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of drives to the bucket. There's going to be a lot of Jalen Brunson posting up Xavier Simpson one-on-one.
Yeah.
And Michigan's just going to let it all happen.
Yes.
That they will not let the Kansas game happen to them.
No, nor should they. I mean, I think they should trust that Simpson is going to be one of the tougher defenders that Brunson has played all year, and specifically as a post defender.
I haven't seen him play post defense yet, so I don't know.
Simpson, they have rotated him into the post a fair amount, and he has forced guys who are a foot taller than him to kick it out. Like Simpson can hang in there.
I don't remember that at all.
When Michigan's done all switching, it's happened. So, he is strong. If there's a guy who can hold up and kind of take Brunson out of his game,
I mean, it's
Xavier, and that's still an if. Brunson.
It's kind of what the game hinges on. Like, can Xavier Simpson do to Jalen Brunson what he's done to point guards for 14 straight games?
Yeah, and then I think the other thing the game hinges on is can Michigan centers suddenly deal with the problem that they've been giving opponents all year, because Spellman's going to be a really tough matchup for Mo Wagner.
I don't know. I think that's more comfortable than other matchups. Like, Michigan's very used to pick and pop stuff. I mean, as you mentioned, you might as well just switch it all.
Yeah, but they haven't played a guy this effective inside and out, and who also does the big man stuff this well.
Yeah.
Because this isn't like facing, I don't know, a Michael Finke type where the guy's just floating for the most part.
Is that the best stretch big Michigan's played this year?
I mean, that's
Michael Finke.
I mean, that's kind of the problem. There aren't that many stretch fives, man. There just aren't.
There's got to be someone.
And there aren't that many that are like freaking good at the big man stuff. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you don't have to worry about like banging in the post with that guy.
I mean,
Spellman's nationally ranked in both rebounding categories and blocking shots.
If Spellman wants to go bang in the post, God bless him.
Yeah, but I think like, I mean, my worry is like, you know, Michigan's offense hasn't been clicking necessarily that well. They have put four of their 11 worst offensive performances of the season up in the NCAA tournament.
So my theory here is
they've saved it all.
Well, it's a geometric progression. So they have a turd against Montana. They have a turd against Houston. They blow A&M out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
They have a couple of turds leading up to the national championship game, which will be another A&M game.
I like the way you think.
It's been foretold in the stars. Something about a Pittsburgh left.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Michigan, honestly, I mean, with the way people are talking about this game, I think Michigan has a better chance than people are giving them credit for. Because the way people are talking about it, this sounds like Michigan Loyola.
Yeah.
And Villanova is
the favorite.
The favorite for a darn good reason.
Yeah.
They're really, really good, but they aren't. They're a very good defense. They aren't an overwhelmingly good defense.
They rank about where Loyola does, which is a little bit alarming.
But I mean, like, you know, if Michigan doesn't make their threes, they're going to lose. Like, that's just.
Yeah. They have to.
That's how it is. They're going to have to hit those shots.
They have to keep pace with.
But Villanova does rely heavily on the three-pointer on offense. And Michigan has done some good stuff to slow down offenses that rely on the three-pointer that heavily.
Yeah.
Because they usually take half their shots about from beyond the arc. Is Michigan going to let them take half their shots from beyond the arc? I don't know. If they are, those shots going to be a lot more contested.
I mean, they won't because they're up.
Yeah. Because that's their whole game plan. Their whole game plan in this game is going to be to run those guys off the line. And if Villanova beats them with layups and dunks, then so be it.
Yeah, that's my main concern is that Villanova is going
to
go.
And they have the capability of doing that. Mikal Bridges is going to be that top 10 pick for darn good reason. He is a 6'7 prototype NBA wing at this point. Brunson is one of the best point guards in the country. Spellman's they're loaded.
Their sixth man is Dante DiVincenzo, whoever, when I look at him, he's just torching people.
Yes.
Redheaded god of war.
So
from Delaware.
Yeah, they're exceptionally tough.
Wait. He's Delawareys. Aries?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you that portmanteau.
So yeah, we are offering Villanova a healthy dose of respect, but Michigan hit that first Wagner three, shoot like A&M, not asking a whole lot,
and
they can win this game,
or score 6 points, Duncan. Just score 6 points. Find a way.
We
may be testing it a little bit.
If that happens and Michigan wins the national championship, that is going in like the stupid stat hall of fame.
And I will love and appreciate that stupid stat for the rest of. I will cherish that stupid stat.
Yes,
it will be my favorite stupid stat.
So Michigan has a 30-ish% chance, according to the advanced stats people.
Yep.
I'll take a
69% Villanova win percentage from KenPom. So, maybe you could look at that as nice, depending on how you're approaching it. I don't know.
No, this is...
It's not nice.
You've ended
this matchup is not nice.
This segment just ended.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley. So did Larry Page. And so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hi, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Got another story for you from my wonderful Tales of Homeownership. There was like a musty smell coming from my crawl space, and when we opened up, there were like a bunch of bugs in there. Anyway, I called Ecointelligent Homes, and it's a good thing I did because as soon as the spring came, that could have gotten a lot worse. I really recommend these guys. They will find the source of the issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they offer financing. Ecointelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call them at 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecointelligenthomes.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Do you know what we forgot to do? We forgot to do a read for Lantana. So I'm just going to do it myself. This is Seth here, and my favorite kind is the sriracha carrot hummus. That's the kind filled with a tangy sweetness, topped with sunflower seeds and apricots, with just the right amount of heat. I like to get carrots or celery to dip with it, but it also goes really well with pretty much any chip, or matzah if you can get it past the Passover police. Anyway, you should bring this to your watch party if you're watching on Monday, because they're going to like it a lot more than the stuff they've been buying. Especially if it's the kind that's made out of kittens.
We've come a long, long way together, through the hard times and the good. I have to celebrate you, baby. I have to praise you like I
In honor of Mo Wagner's Hakeem-like performance,
yes,
in a Final Four game, I think we're doing a top five of the top postseason performances in recent Michigan history. Recent being defined by we remember it personally. So no 1992s out there.
Yes.
Just
apologies to the blue hairs, but you know, we got to go with what we know.
Sorry, Craig. All right, ace number five.
I would go with Charles Woodson versus Washington State. I know Brian Griese comes away with the MVP in that game, but Charles Woodson is Woodson in that game. He comes up with the tremendously critical and visually awesome end zone interception. is generally Charles Woodson on defense in that game, and that I think is enough, especially once you account for the circumstances, to include him here.
I also had him at number five, but then he got shoved out of the way by a Washington State wide receiver.
And well played.
I wrote down Tom Brady in the Orange Bowl.
Okay.
So Tom Brady has 369 passing yards in this game in approximately three quarters.
Pretty nice.
Because I remember screaming for the entire first half of this game.
Throw the dang ball.
Throw the ball to Terrell. What are you doing? Throw the ball to Terrell. And I remember Warren St. John wrote a book about Alabama football, and it was this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading this book, and I realize that, oh my God, this is the year that Michigan played them in the Orange Bowl. And St. John spends like a whole chapter talking about like the shape of this Alabama football team, which was a bunch of murderers on the defensive line backed up by complete gits at cornerback. And yep. I was like reading this book, and I'm like, what's going on?
And they're just trying to A-train it through there, and it's not really happening.
Yeah.
And then they figure out that like
they're
not winning the A-train versus Sean Alexander battle, but they can win the David Terrell versus Freddie Millins battle.
Is good. So, yeah. 370 yards in a bowl game, an Orange Bowl, yeah, against Alabama.
Not bad. Five. Not bad at all.
H number four.
My number four is Derek Walton against Oklahoma State. Okay. From last year's NCAA tournament when he drops 26, goes 6 for 9 on threes, hits one from the frickin' logo, drops 11 assists against 3 turnovers, comes up with a couple steals, just one of the most magnificent shooting performances I've ever seen, and hit him in a bunch of different ways. The other play that sticks out to me, other than him firing one from the logo and drilling it, is him catching the ball in the corner against Juwan Evans, who is a very good player in his own right at point guard. That was the matchup heading into that game. Just kind of stared at him for a couple seconds, took one jab step, and then just rose up and hit a three right in his face. And it was that kind of game.
It was.
There was no doubt that it was going in.
Delirious.
It was a shock every time he missed. And that was kind of like the peak of the, you know, Derek, the final month and a half or so of Derek Walton's career.
Yeah. My number four is Mo Buckus last night.
All right.
Because 20 and 15 in a Final Four game, especially a Final Four game where that's the only thing keeping you off the scrap heap, single-handedly drags this team. Also, his defense on the primary post threat that they presented, he holds Kartwig to a 92 O rating.
Yeah, no, this was an excellent all-around performance. This was not just a historic offensive game.
So, just pulled us single-handedly to a national title game. So, number four.
Good on him.
H number three.
Is Brady and Terrell in the Orange Bowl.
Okay. My number three is Trey versus Kansas, because not only did Trey hit the shot to win that game, not to tie that game, but he came out and hit two more daggers in the overtime.
And had some shots to foreshadow it earlier in the
yes.
game, too. This was an unconscious Trey Burke game.
Well, if you remember, he struggled very badly against Jeff Withey in the first half.
Yes.
Almost completely shut down, and then, you know, he adjusts. It was his G League trip in miniature, right?
Yes.
He goes into the G League of halftime, comes back out, and is Allen Iverson in the second half.
Yeah.
Just in terms of... maybe not efficiency, but just in terms of...
Allen Iverson crosses like Steph Curry.
Cajones.
Yeah.
Just single-handedly refusing to let your team not win.
Yes.
Lose, I think is what it's called.
Yeah. We refuse to even acknowledge the word.
Ace number two.
Bo Wagner versus Loyola. I think, you know, the really just like single-handed aspect of it where, I mean, Michigan would have been blown the heck out if not for him.
Yeah. Basketball has an unfair advantage here because they have so many more games than football does.
They do.
At least now.
Especially postseason games, yeah. Which is what we're talking about here.
Yeah. My number two is Sean Hunwick against North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Saw this one coming.
The only surprise, I think, is probably that it's not number one
on
the
list. Yep, that is the surprise.
But he single-handedly holds North Dakota, a team full of... extraordinarily good hockey players off the board for the entirety of it. Also spawns one of my favorite posts I've ever written, so kind of sticks top of mind.
Yeah.
Tiny Jesus. Number two. Ace, your number one.
Is Trey Burke versus Kansas. The thing that makes a difference for me, even though Burke had it wasn't quite as strong through the course of the entire game,
yeah,
was that they were playing Kansas instead of Loyola. And I think the, you know, with the opponent factor there,
I think Withy had maybe the top block rate in the country as well.
Like, yes. Yeah. I mean, he's a tremendous defender. He had 5 blocks in this game. Yes, that year he was 5th in the country in block rate at 13.7, which is in the, you know, like Jaren Jackson range.
Yeah.
So he was a phenomenal player. I think the degree of difficulty for Burke was a little bit higher.
Yeah. I mean, he
also hits, you know, a pretty big shot in there.
The big shot, yeah. My number one is any game Glenn Rice played in 1989.
Fair enough. Absolutely fair enough. I was 2 at that point, so you know I didn't feel right. quite right including this.
It was a little bit before your time, almost before my time as well. But if you go back and you look at his performance in the tourney, he's putting up 30 points a game. He's shooting 50% or better from 3 in virtually every game, and Michigan wins a title largely on the back of Glenn Rice going off.
Yeah, I mean, he held it, might even continue to hold the tournament scoring record. He held it for way longer than anybody who played in that era ever should.
Yeah.
He was both ahead of his time and then just had an unbelievable run.
Yeah, Glenn Rice, like, of all the players, like, I could, like, pick from the past to put on any B-line team, Glenn Rice, easy.
Yeah. Yeah, you combine that size with that yeah. unbelievable shooting ability and then try to translate that to what he'd look like as a modern player.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yep, not bad.
Fun stuff.
So you had some honorable mentions.
I did want to give a few shout-outs. Mitch McGarry versus Syracuse in 2013 when he just becomes Magic Johnson for a game.
Mike DeBoard versus Florida in the Citrus Bowl. That's not even a joke.
I know. I hate you for it.
But
for just a thunderbolt of an impact, but not necessarily the all-around game that would require to crack the top 5, Nick Stauskas versus Florida.
Yeah. That crossed my mind as well. Ty Wheatley in the Rose Bowl against Washington.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Mo Wagner versus Louisville last year.
Yes.
Yes. That would have been his career best performance until yesterday.
I still remember the up fake at the end of the game, which was the most beautiful thing in the world.
Yes. I mean, and that was a game where, you know, Derek Walton is struggling mightily throughout that entire game,
yeah.
and Michigan needs somebody to keep them in it, and Wagner comes through in spades. So that was kind of his precursor to the Loyola game, really. I'm sure I'm missing some other...
Stauskas against Kentucky?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a loss, but... I just remember being in that arena, and there were the Kentucky fans next to me who were just terrified of him.
Yeah.
They were like, get it out of that white boy's hands. They didn't sound like that, but that's that's what came out of my mouth. Sorry, Freddie.
You also get John Teske versus Purdue for including Big Ten tournament.
No, I can't. You can't I'm include kidding. A Big I'm Ten kidding. Tournament game.
But, yeah, I mean, there are so many from recent NCAA tournament because I mean almost everybody seemingly stepped up at one point.
Yeah.
Football, there's been a little bit less. I'm sorry.
Junior Hemingway, Sugar Bowl.
Yes.
Not really.
Jareth Glanda.
Jareth Glanda. All right, let's stop talking about that.
Yeah. Final Four championship game.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am a Sam Bender along with Brian Cook. One more time, win the game.
Bust the ass.